guys, welcome back to the Spreading Hoppiness podcast. This episode will focus on the processing of hops. Over to Mark.
I'm beer writer Mark Dredge, and today I'm with Tim Luckham, the quality production manager at Charles Fairham. We are talking everything hop pellets. That's everything from how they're made, from when they arrive from the hop farm in bales as flowers, all the way through to the end when they're into packets and sent out to you in the brewery. And we're talking about all the continuous improvements in quality that they're making throughout the year. There's lots of things in this conversation that I didn't know, didn't understand about hop pellets. So I hope there's a load of stuff in here that you find interesting as well. We'd love to hear feedback, any questions you've got, anything you'd like us to cover in future episodes of this podcast. You can send us an email at podcast@charlesfairham.co.uk. Right, now let's hear from Tim Luckham. Yeah, so I think if you want to tell me a bit about your role at Charles Fairham.
Sure. I've been here nearly 9.5 years now. I took over from Simon Smith, the production director, 2021 crop. And I've been quality and production manager ever since.
So day to day, what's your job look like?
Okay, so obviously being head of quality, that is not just the quality of our products, it's also the quality of our business systems and stuff on site. And then from a production side, you know, it's organising all the hops coming in, the splits, fresh pack to T90, what the customers' requirements are, pack sizes, and organising production runs.
And we're talking about pellets today.
Yeah.
That's the focus of today's podcast. I think if you could take me basically from almost the field until the end packet goes out, because I've not followed this process all the way through. So the hop has been picked, it's been dried on the hop farm or wherever it's going to be dried, and it arrives at you in a big bale.
Yep.
What happens next?
Okay, so the bale will arrive on site. As soon as it arrives, Terry and the warehouse guys, those bales will be unloaded straight away, put into the cold store where we do our quality checks. So even though the farmer's already moisture checked it for us and said it's between 8 and 10% moisture, we will double check just as, again, another quality check. Once that's done, it goes straight into the cold stores for storage until processing. We will try and process within 4 to 5 days of those bales coming on site, all going well, because it's all about, once the bale's on, let's get it in an oxygen-free environment to hold in all those lovely flavours for the brewers.
Are you making pellets all through the year, or is it very much end of harvest, here we go?
Just like you say, so there's a window there. So obviously harvest, you know, sort of finishes around September sort of time. By the time they've harvested, dried the hops, obviously got them all baled up, we will then start getting the intake come. Obviously we get hops from all around the world, so some of them are harvested slightly earlier than others, which is good for my point of view, because if everything was ready all at the same time, it's sort of, where do you go first? It naturally sort of follows a pattern, just because whatever's been harvested first, we will bring in first and try and get processed as quick as possible.
So you're pelletizing hops from around the world then?
Yes.
So they will arrive to you. Would you get New Zealand hops, American hops?
So New Zealand hops, the pellets are brought in already pelletized. Yeah. And then we'll get bales in to do the fresh packs. But there have been conversations where in the future we may actually pelletise New Zealand varieties as well here. What we gain from that is about 6 weeks, because obviously while we're waiting for them to pelletise them, their bales are on the water coming to us. If we had all the bales straight away, we could actually do both, because we've got 3 processing lines, so I can do fresh pack and T90 at the same time. So that would mean the customer will get the newer crop sooner. So that's a conversation that's going on with New Zealand hops at the moment. But our window basically usually start about the 1st of October, just because we have to get enough hops on site first to make it beneficial for us to start the machines. And then we will be looking at finishing. Fresh pack should be done within the next 3 weeks. and then pelletizing. Ideally, we'd like to be done by end of March. It all depend on volumes, but that's the sort of window I'm looking for. And then the rest of the year, I'm doing my other part of my job, which is more improvements, more quality updates and all that kind of stuff. Myself and Jim, our production engineer, year on year since we took over, we sort of go, right, that's what we're going to look at this year. How can we make that better?
I think we'll talk about that in a minute.
Sure.
Can you answer one quick question for me?
Okay.
Freshpak versus T90.
Yes.
What does that mean?
So Freshpak, all we're doing in a Freshpak is we're breaking down an RB60 bale, which is 60 kilos, and we're breaking it down and we're putting it into a smaller bale, 5 kilos. As flowers. All we do is we break up the bale back into loose hop cones, weigh it, push it back into a bale, put it into a vacuum sealed bag to the customer done. Mm-hmm. Pellets, there's more process. So very similar, the front end of the process, bale goes in, we break it up into loose leaf hops, it goes over a gravity trap and some magnets, last clean before we start processing it. It then goes into our hammer mill. The hammer mill breaks up the hop cones into a hop dust and it'll pulverize it into a nice uniformed hop dust. After that, drops into what we call a blender, does exactly what it says on the tin, blends all the lovely hops all together so you're getting a consistent product throughout the pelleting process. We could do anything from a ton of hops into pellet to 30, 40 tons of hops. Well, when you're doing a 30, 40 ton blend, it's all about getting the consistency from pellet one to the last pellet. So that blending is really, really important to just get all that homogenization going, get all that flavor in there. Once you've got it all nicely blended, you're now going to extract the hop dust and take it to the die. Now, the die is the bitter kit that will form the pellet. So what we do is we pull the dust, it then drops into a cell wheel, which is just above the pelleting die, and then that feeds the pelleting die, but it feeds it at a consistent rate. You don't want just dribs and drabs dropping in, because then your pellet quality and density will vary. So it's all about feeding nice and slow, a bit like making pancake mix. You feed the milk in nice and slow as you do it so you don't get lumps. So that's what you're doing.
When you say a hop dust,
yes,
is this exactly how I imagine this to be? It's just green dust.
Absolutely. It's probably not quite a dust. It's like chopped parsley. if you want to sort of put it in a culinary sort of term, how you
like
chop
a chopped dried herb, maybe.
Yes, yes, okay. Just like a
so
chopped
thicker
dried
than,
herb.
Thicker than or bigger than a dust, but not lumps.
Exactly. Yeah, it's hard to describe
without
showing.
This is a technical podcast, and we're going into it's not dust. It's just, but not lumps.
Yes, I probably should have brought some samples with me. Once you've got that all uniformed, and then obviously it's all about feeding into that dye. Now, you need to keep the dye temperature as low as possible to give the brewer what they want. The worst thing you can do is cook a pellet, because if you cook a pellet, all that aroma is gone. Now, we want that aroma locked inside that pellet, so as soon as the brewer adds those pellets to the liquor, it releases all those lovely flavours that we all want to drink. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of cooling that goes involved in that process. So once the pellet is formed, it comes straight out and it goes into our cooling tower. That is one of the other things that we've improved over the last couple of years. We're now cooling at -1 to 1 degree, because you want to, again, lock that flavour in. Once it's been cooled, it goes straight into the bag. Now, I know some pellet processors don't bag straight away. We do, again, lock in the flavour. And that's it. It gets bagged, boxed, straight into, back into cold store for maximum sort of storage conditions, ready to go out to the customer.
Can we go back to the dye part and the actual pressing of the pellet? So this, all the hops come through, mm-hmm, into the dye.
Yes.
Is that right? And then is it just pressed together? How does it form into the actual pellet shape?
So what the dye does is the dye is moving around at a rate of knots. Mm. As the hop matter is introduced to that, just by fugal force, as it's going round, the hops will start to go through the extrusions. So if you imagine, it looks like a tumble dryer inside. There's lots and lots and lots and lots of holes. As the hop matter is being fed into the pellet die, it is extruded through those holes, which are probably, well, the pellet die is about that thick, give or take. Now, what's happening there is you don't want that to get too dense. So you want that to move through at a good consistent level. So you don't want too much friction. You don't want it sat in there too long because, again, it will cook. So what Jim, our production engineer, his main role is feeding that through in a way that the pellet's not too hard, but at the same time, it's not too loose because it could also go the other way and you could end up with a bag of dust. It's getting that balance right. And that's one of the things we've worked at. We've worked at modifying our dies so they don't get as hot and that you've got a low density pellet. Again, listening to sort of customers, that's what they're telling us they want, especially with obviously the new dry hopping and things like that. You know, you're not just boiling your pellet anymore. You know, you might be adding it at the last minute to just get that last flavour notes and stuff like that. So again, it's sort of creating a pellet that's fit for multi purposes, where I believe in the past you didn't need to.
No, that makes sense. In my mind, I'm imagining this almost like a pasta maker, if that makes sense. So the dough is being pushed through, and then as it's turning around, it's being squeezed through, and then it's being chopped off. So then the pellets are dropping through.
Absolutely.
As they're being formed.
Because as soon as, if the pellet dies like that, as soon as, like you say, it starts to come out the other end, we have cutters on the inside, so that goes around at the same time. So that will give you the uniformed length of the pellet. Mm.
And there's no heat. You're talking about the heat and wanting to maintain that or not have warmth there.
Yeah.
Would then naturally, do you need warmth as part of that process?
You need some warmth to form the pellet. So again, depending on the variety, the oil content, which, you know, from a brewing perspective is important, but from a processing perspective, it's important as well. The higher alpha hops, the ones with more oils in them, are a lot easier to process. So, you know, some of those punchy American ones, Columbus, things like that, they're a piece of cake to make. They really are. The lower alpha pellets, you know, your SARS, things like that, they're a little more tricky. But we have ways around that, because now what we can do is we can speed up or slow down the machine. So we're controlling the heat. So we work off heat sinks. So as quick as we put the heat into the machine, if it's starting to look like the heat's starting to go up, we'll actually speed the machine up. The heat going in, we can then pull it out as quick. So it's almost in, out, in, out. And again, that's something that Jim's sort of integral with what he's sort of done over the last couple of years of sort of keeping that temperature down. We have a temperature monitor actually at the die, so we can literally react straight away. Because if you don't, it's hard to get that temperature back down. I mean, in the past, in experiments, we'd have to switch the machine off. But again, that's something that we've really been working hard on over the last couple of years.
You talk then about the difference between Columbus and SARS. Are there differences between varieties?
Absolutely.
In terms of the way you would process them?
Yes. So, you know, just like the brewer has, you know, has his preference, I don't have that because I'm doing everything for everyone. So depending on the oil content, depends on the speed the machine will run. It will depend on the screen we use, the screen being the apparatus that sort of holds the hop cones there long enough while we're hammer milling it. The higher the alpha, the more oils, the bigger the screen would be, we'd use a bigger hole because otherwise it clogs up. Where the smaller varieties, you actually want to get it into a smaller powder because it forms better as a pellet. Otherwise you have sort of trouble the other end when you're packaging and stuff, the pellets start to sort of fall apart again.
Is this because of that oil content? Because when we fill hops, the higher the alpha, the higher the oil content, it's sticky.
Sticky, yeah.
And it's the same in the processing.
Absolutely. You know, if we're rubbing, we do a lot of, obviously, grading stuff at the same time, just after harvest. And, you know, when we're rubbing those hops, I can tell how much of a nightmare it's going to be or not, you know, making it in the pellet. Like I say, you know, the Columbuses and stuff, don't bat an eyelid with. If we're ever doing any improvements, I would never use a Columbus as an experimental hop to see if our improvements have worked. Because anyone, in my eyes, could process a Columbus pellet. You know, I would use something, like I say, a Sart, a Lebowski, something like that. Something that challenges me. But yes, oil is key. Absolutely key. And moisture to a point. If the hops cones have been dried to the drier end of the tolerance, that can cause trouble as well. Just because there's not enough to stickiness to get it together, especially if it's a low oiled one at the same time. So there are intricacies to it. Also, each cone weighs different. You know, depending on the hop harvest can depend on how beefy the hop cone is, for want of a better word. Because sometimes if they're too light, what happens when you get them in the blender? The blender is huge. It's twice the size of this room with a paddle 8 feet by 6 feet. So what you've got to imagine is as that's going round, what happens is you're just getting airflow. You're actually creating your own airflow. If the hops are too light, they don't actually drop to the bottom of the blender. So we have trouble extracting that then to then pull it through into the pelleting die itself. So again, it's that speed. It's that, what is the variety? Over the last few years, we've actually created a matrix now. So we'll go, right, what are we making today? Fuggles, okay, Fuggles. We run it at that speed, at that temperature, at that rate with that screen. And that's sort of something that was really on my remit when I sort of took over, that we should have, you know, an A to Z guide of sort of how each hop cone reacts in our machine.
Yeah, well, brilliant. Now, I've heard T90, T45s.
Yeah.
Do you make both of those here?
No, just Type 90s.
Okay.
The difference, a Type 90, the 90 bit means that there's 90% of the hop matter still there, so we're taking 10% away from what was grown in the field. Type 45, there's another process. In a T90, we break the bale down into loose hops. It then gets hammer milled. It then gets blended and then gets pelleted. In the Type 45, once you've got to the blended bit, you remove more hop matter that you don't want. So we're talking, you know, the leaf, and what you want to keep is your lupulin and all those good, all the lovely yellow sticky flavourings that makes great beer. And you then remove more and then make the pellet. So it's more concentrated.
You talked a bit about improvements that you've made.
Sure.
And certainly about quality, which is obviously key for brewers and drinkers. Can you talk through some of the qualities, some of the quality improvements that you've made in the last few years?
Absolutely. I was talking about the screens and how that we've actually reduced all our screen sizes by 20% because of some of the tweaks that we've done, some of the quality experiments we've done on different varieties. Now, what that gives us, again, is I'm looking for that consistency. In manufacturing, it's all about consistency of product. So it's getting... milled product the same, whether it's a Columbus sticky or a Sart that's a little drier and less oily. And that's what that screen will give me, that consistency. One of the other things we've worked at really hard with is we actually bought a new die last year and we've modified it. So it's one of a kind. And some of the things we've done on that is we've bored out some of the holes, so the extrusion isn't the same length all the way. So by doing that either end, instead of it going through, and if you imagine something, the longer it stays in there, it gets harder and harder. Well, we've opened up the back of the die a little bit. And what that does is, while the pellet is still slightly warm and been formed, it then slightly opens back up again. And what that will give you is, hopefully, one of our pellets, if you dropped that into a cup of water, you should see it to start to dissolve, a bit like a Rennie or, you know, an aspirin or something like that. Where in the past, that wasn't the case. It would still dissolve, but it'd be the time that it takes. Again, dry hopping and things like that now, you haven't got that time anymore and you haven't got that process in there where at 60 odd degrees, you've got time for it to break down. You need it to just sort of break down a bit like a stock cube, I suppose. So again, a lot of the work on the die there, that's given us less dense pellets, which again is what the customer's been crying out for. One of the other major ones is our cooling systems. Jim, our production engineer, has redesigned it from scratch. So we literally took it all apart. He came up with a concept, and we've just been testing it all summer long in some of the hottest summer temperatures that we've ever had in the UK, and it's worked a dream. So that's something else that's really sort of took us to the next level, I feel.
What is most exciting about your job?
Personally, I love the continuous improvement. That is my thing. I come from a quality background, so I come from quality and manufacturing. I used to work for a quite prestigious car company. So I know how to improve things, whether it's a hop cone or a business system, a quality system. That's my forte, so to speak. So that's the most enjoyable bit. Myself and Jim, again, I talk about him a lot. We spend a lot of 6 o'clockers up in my office upstairs in the loft, just bouncing around ideas. And then the fun bit happens in the summer when I haven't got a process hops and we can start looking at the next big thing. Again, we've got some exciting more improvements that we want to look into this summer. I don't want to say too much at the moment, but yeah, watch this space.
And a lot of this comes from feedback that you're getting from brewers.
Absolutely. Before I took over from Simon, from the production point of view, I was already the quality manager here. So again, you know, I listen to complaints, I listen to feedback, I go to the hop walk, where I tend to be the car parking attendant, but it's a great place to just get that brew and go, how's the pellets going? How's this? How's that? You've got to get that feedback. It's all about the customer feedback. And then I just then have to come back and figure out how I'm going to give them what they want.
When you're making these pellets, and this is a question for me as a nerd who likes flavour, does this just make the whole room smell amazing?
Absolutely.
And then, in that case, what's the best smelling hop when you're turning it to pellets?
See, we do play a little game here on site because, like I say, you know, me and my guys, we start at 6 o'clock in the morning, then the office guys sort of come in sort of around 8 o'clock. You know, people will come in and go, what are you pelleting today? You tell me, you're the experts. You know, some of the lovely varieties, I love a Jester being pelletized, that smells amazing around site. Harlequins, you know, I know everyone goes on about Harlequin, but again, it smells amazing when you're processing it. It smells amazing even before it's even hitting the die. You know, as soon as you've got it in that blender and it's just stirring around, you can smell it literally up the lane coming down. Some of the new world flavours, I love Idaho 7s. Again, it's a lovely smelling hop. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but just from aromas around the site, it's beautiful, beautiful, yeah.
Does this mean now you're so familiar with the smell of hops, someone can give you a pint and you're like, yep, I know that hop, or does it not translate quite like that?
It doesn't quite translate. I think sometimes, and again, I've had conversations with brewers where, you know, I've said, you know, some like Idaho 7s, there doesn't seem to be a lot of beers with that in here. It doesn't really give me what I want. But it smells amazing. You know, from my point of view, I'm using my nose. You know, I'm not putting a hop cone in my mouth. that it's quite interesting from my point of view, because obviously I'm looking for different things than the brewer is in the taste, that the smell to then, like you say, the finished article can be, you know, night and day sometimes. So I think it is different, definitely. If you could bottle it and make air fresheners out of it, it'd be amazing.
I mean, I'd wear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Harlequin by Charles Fairham, just sprayed around.
It's got that sounds brilliant, doesn't
it? Yeah. That'll be an April Fool's next time. Yeah.
Charlie, she'll do
it. I'm sure they've done that before.
A TikTok video or something, yeah.
All right, brilliant. That's been really interesting. I'm asking these questions as someone who wants to know the answers to this, because, you know, I drink so many beers, and most of the beers I drink use hop pellets. And to understand how they go from something that looks beautiful on a hop vine in a garden to this, I mean, I don't want this to sound bad, but, hop pellets aren't sexy as a flower in a field. So I
totally agree,
But the flavour of them is so important and so integral to what we drink. So how you can capture the magic and the beauty of that plant into something that is so usable and useful and essential to brewers is a real skill. So it's really interesting to understand how it works.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I've wanted to do since we've been making these improvements is we do a lot of free sample packs and stuff like that now. Get it out to the brewer, get some feedback. Last year I was at the Hop Walk giving them out and then trying to get people to stay there a minute, open them, you know, squidge them, as I say. You know, let's start that conversation. I am becoming an absolute pellet nerd.
Great. Well, I think that's a great place to end the conversation. So yeah, thank you very much.
It's been really interesting. Thank you, Mark. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Now moving on to our 5 minutes with Theram segment.
So could you just start by introducing yourself, like I said, to your name and what brewery you're from?
Yeah, so I'm Lucy Caudry and I'm from Crinium Ales in Cirencester, which is in Gloucestershire.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Floral. So just a bit of background, we're at Bristol Beer Factory today for our Aroma Fest. And so Lucy is joining me and we're going to be going through our 5 minutes with Theram today. Yeah. So if we just start off, what's your favourite hop?
Favourite hop? There's so many.
I know.
Obviously there's some wonderful English hops and some wonderful New World hops. But I guess, I mean, the one that we use quite a lot is Pilgrim. So, which is an English hop for bittering.
Yeah, great.
We use that across our brews. But I guess, you know, one of the standouts has to be Mosaic or Simcoe.
Bless it.
I mean, Simcoe is the one that got me into brewing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How?
So
I feel like there's a story there.
So it was over 12 years ago, probably more than that now. We were out in America, as you know, that's where a lot of the proper hops are that we brew with nowadays. But you know, the craft brewing industry hadn't really hit our shores all those years ago. So when we were out there, we weren't expecting the beers to be really hoppy like that. We just thought we'd be drinking Bud and Beck, sort of industrial lagers and stuff. So when we were sat down in this wonderful little brew pub in Wyoming called Snake River Brewing, we were drinking this 6.8% IPA called Paco, and the hop in it was Simcoe, and it just made me and my partner sit up and think, what the hell is this? This is just so
crazy. Were you not in brewing at that point?
Not at that point, no. I mean, I was into drinking. Into drinking real and stuff, but not, you know, I think, you know, we knew about BrewDog and those sorts of breweries, but they were the only ones at the time, I think, that were brewing with anything really strong, New World's hop.
Oh, interesting. So that's your first sort of big memory.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So do you have a favourite beer that comes to mind?
Well, yeah, I do. And I mean, I guess I'm a real stickler for dark beers, actually. So stouts and porters.
Oh, nice.
And particularly when you go into the sort of imperials and the stronger ones.
Yeah.
But also they're just so smooth and can be so smooth and creamy. And before I got into real ale and craft beer, and it was stout, that I used to love.
So if you were having a dark, you know, stout, what food would you pair it with?
Oh, wow. It's a kind of food all on its own, really.
Yeah, it's a meal.
I'd probably just go for some nice cheese because, you know, a strong cheese or something. Cheese goes with pretty much anything, doesn't it?
Yeah. So do you have a favourite pub in the world?
Golly, favourite pub in the world? I think not really, but one pops to mind. And it's a pub up in the Lake District that some people might know about, Wasdale Head. And it's a great little place where you can go and camp.
Oh, lovely. The Lake District.
Yeah, and it's really popular. So going in summer is obviously probably a no-no, but go out of season and it's just a little real ale pub at the top of Wasdale Head.
Got some nice stout there, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Yeah. So if you had one item in the brewery that you couldn't live without, what would it be?
What would it be? this sounds really sexist, but because I'm a girl, a female, but I would say a decent cloth and a mop.
Yeah.
Because there's so much cleaning you have to do after brewing a beer.
Sure.
You know, having some good cleaning. Equipment is essential.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Yeah.
Do you have a favourite song or album or certain music that you listen to in the brewery?
Do you know what? Me and my partner both brew, and he brews. We don't brew together, but he'll probably have the radio on, or he'll have some podcast going on. But I actually quite like The Quiet.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have the Spreading Hoppiness podcast on now. Yeah.
Yeah.
You obviously mentioned about the hops that you remember when you're in America.
Yeah.
But what put you into brewing?
Always been a real ale drinker. And it was a light bulb moment when we were drinking the 6.8% pack of IPA with Simcoe hop in it. I just, you know, it might have been the drink talking, but I kind of said to my partner, Colin, I said, well, maybe when I get back, I'll look into setting up a microbrewery because there was obviously quite a lot. It was a growing industry then.
Yeah.
And it's still a very vibrant industry. And on the way home, on the flight home, I was looking through the in-flight magazine.
Yeah.
And there was an article in that in-flight magazine on microbreweries in Gloucestershire in the Cotswolds.
Stop it. It's like it's meant to be.
And I thought, it's a sign.
That is a sign.
Oh, it's either a sign, don't go there because there's already quite a few, or, you know, go for it.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'll explore it when I get back and see how far I get. Because I'd just come out of a redundancy, actually. So I had a little bit of cash.
Sure. Like, what's next?
It was what's next. Clean slate. You know, where should I go from here?
Brilliant. Yeah. That's definitely a sign, I think.
Yeah.
Have you been to many beer festivals? Do you have a favourite?
You know, I probably don't get to as many as I'd like to because we're too damn busy brewing.
Yeah,
the Cotswold Beer Festival is always a good one.
So do you have any hobbies or interests outside of brewing?
Well, I used to swim a lot and walk a lot. Don't get a lot of time for much of that these days, but I like to take myself off for a little walk, listen to the birds. I mean, I'm a bit of a bird nerd.
Oh, I love that. Do you have a book?
Yes, I do have a bird book. But I kind of know most of them now. I used to work for the RSPB years ago, so the Royal Society of Protection of Birds.
That's
so
the
I
nature. So if you like hear a bird chirping, you'll be like, oh,
that's a song thrush.
Oh, that's bad. I like that.
You get all your different birds coming in at the spring.
Yeah, I bet they're all coming in now, aren't they? So that's lovely.
Mm.
So what's the last beer you brewed?
The last beer we brewed was actually our... it was an IPA, actually. It was we've got an IPA called El Caesar, because where I brew in Cirencester, it's got Roman heritage. And so Carinium Ales, Carinium is Roman for Cirencester, it's a Roman name. And so El Caesar is our hoppy IPA, and it's got the Simcoe hop. That's our tribute.
Like a full circle.
A full circle.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's really lovely.
That IPA has stood its time. Over the years, you know, we've not had to tweak the recipes.
No.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Love that. So only a couple more questions.
Okay.
So short and sweet.
Yeah.
Guggles or Golding?
Oh. Probably Goldings, actually.
Interesting. Yeah. Any reason for that?
I don't know if I've ever brewed with fuzzles, so I can't really...
So, by default?
By default.
By order of elimination. Yeah,
I know a dog called Fuggles.
Oh, sweet.
But never brewed with fuzzles.
We were at a location last week in Birmingham, and then you had two cats, and I think one was called Malt and one was called Hot.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was good. Yeah. So, last question. Yeah. What's next for you in the industry?
Well... We've grown slowly over the last 10, 11 years. We started out in our garage with a 100-litre kit. We're now on what they call a 2.5 brewer's barrel length, which is tiny, but we're expanding this year to a 5 brewer's barrel, so we're doubling. So we're still really, really small, but
no, that's brilliant.
You know, we can't meet demand, so we're looking to expand this year. Well, yeah. The kit's being rolled for us.
That's really exciting. Wow. So, yeah. That's what's coming for 2024.
Yeah, and we're doing lots of nice activities at the brewery as well. Lots
brilliant. Of oh, cool. Well, thank you very much. Thank really you. Appreciate you coming yeah. and having a chat with us.
Oh, it's great. Thank
that
you
was really
asking.
Interesting conversation.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
Really nice.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Spreading Hoppiness, the Charles Fairham podcast. If you've got any questions or if there's anything you'd love us to go over in future episodes, then send us an email at podcast@charlesfairham.co.uk. See you again soon.
So Patch, how long have you been at Fairham's for again now?
I've been here for 7 weeks.
Is that it? It actually feels like you've been here forever. So what I want to know, Patrick, is your first thoughts on Charles Fairham.
So my first thoughts on Charles Fairham is that we're a hop merchant based in Worcester. However, when I did a bit of research during my interview, I found out that we don't just sell hops, we also sell yeast, malt and loads of other brewing products. And the best place to find this information would be our website, charlesfairham.com. Also on our website, you'll find loads of information about all of our products and our FAQ pages.
So don't forget, you can learn, shop and keep updated with our Charles Fairham events at charlesfairham.com.